The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, man, that was a great weekend of sports this weekend. There was a lot going on. So, we had some great NBA playoff games all weekend. Had some great baseball games this weekend. And we had a great boxing fight this weekend as well. So let's go ahead and start off with that since, Tyson Fury, he is, if you look at his track record, he's definitely one of the best boxers of all time. And he's definitely, especially this generation, he's hands down this generation's one of the best heavyweights for sure. Definitely feel like I have to talk about him, especially because he said that this last fight was, quote, his retirement. So we'll see how that goes. These days you kind of take that with a grain of salt since a lot of guys retire and then they're like, oh, just kidding, and come right back. So you never know. But, and also too, Tyson Fury, he's still in great shape and can still box. And that showed this weekend as well. He KO'd, Dillian White. I actually was mispronouncing his name on Friday's episode. I was calling him Dillian. It's Dillian White. He KO'd him in the sixth round with this nice uppercut. Most of the fight was pretty much dominated by Tyson Fury. In the first round, White had a little bit of fight, but for the most part, especially once the third round hit, Tyson Fury just was starting to run away with it. And you could tell at some point how White was going to get knocked out. And sixth round came around, and he just got KO'd with a solid uppercut. And that's really just the way Tyson Fury's career should end, if that's the way it ends. He walks away with a 32-0-1 career record, which is spectacular. He's had 23 knockouts total. So, that's also spectacular. And, that's what he's really known for. What's really one of my favorite moves that he does is where he kind of like fakes like he's going to punch you, and then he comes right back and punches you. So it's just one of the craziest moves. You don't see a lot of guys doing that. And just kind of when he would taunt people, one of the Klitschko fights, he was taunting the hell out of Vladimir Klitschko, and it's actually really funny to watch. And also something else that was really funny to watch, over the weekend, I decided to watch like his greatest knockouts, and in his greatest knockouts, it included, some of his, English league fights where he was only facing off against, people in the English league. And I'd never seen any of these knockouts, and it's actually quite hilarious because there are a few knockouts where dudes are literally like cowering in a corner, like, please don't touch me anymore. Please don't touch me anymore. I can't handle this. So it's actually quite funny, to watch some of his old knockouts from back in the day. I mean, he's a great boxer. And his last three fights against Deontay Wilder. Now that trilogy, that was a great trilogy. I think that was probably out of everything his entire career, I think those were probably his best fights, at least that I've seen so far. I mean, I haven't seen every one of his fights, but all three of those fights were great matches. And the first one, it sucked that it ended up being a draw, which is always weak, and especially because I kind of feel like I lean towards Fury in that one. Although it was very close, and out of all three of the fights, that one was definitely the closest. They got the draw, and then the second time they faced off, Deontay Wilder comes in and he blamed his big ass costume, which I find amusing because that's just so typical of today's society where like you care way more about your stupid walk-in than you care about actually winning the fight. And you could actually tell in that that second matchup between the two of them, you could tell his legs were wobbly, especially as the fight wore on. And he did end up knocking him out. I think it was like in the third, fourth round, but regardless, you know, Tyson Fury absolutely dominated him in the second one matchup. And then in the third one, once again, Wilder didn't really have his feet. He got wobbly legs, and so you could tell he was, as that fight went on, and that one went, what did that one go, like 11? I think that one went 11. All three of those fights were great matches, and he was a great fighter. Now, it looks like I said, he's retiring from professional boxing, but he did announce that it's possible that he and UFC fighter Ngannou are going to be possibly doing one of those gimmicky fights. And honestly, I'm not into the gimmicky fights. I'm going to get it. Don't get me wrong. These guys are making a lot of money off of these gimmicky fights. I get it, but at the same time, to me, it just kind of is, you know, like I've never watched the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor fight, because just from the few highlights that I've seen, Conor McGregor didn't belong in a boxing ring with literally one of the greatest boxers of all time. And both sports are completely different. You know, UFC does use boxing in it. But at the same time, it's not boxing. And there is a sweet technical science to boxing. And I've never really bought into this whole gimmicky shit, especially when it comes to these UFC boxing crossovers. But hey, man, if they're getting paid, can't hate on it. But I definitely, I personally probably won't watch it just because I'm not into the whole gimmicky boxing thing. I just think it kind of mocks the sport of boxing, in my personal opinion. So we'll see what happens there. You know, Ngannou is actually recovering from a huge major knee injury right now. So who knows when this would happen? It seems more like it'll be like a maybe 6 to 8 month, type of timeline, or maybe even kind of like a next year thing. But regardless, Tyson Fury is definitely one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. He had a great career. Even when he stepped away for those couple of years where he was having the mental health issues and having the drug problems, even his comeback was huge. And it's he just was an overall excellent fighter. And while this last fight he had wasn't one of the greatest fights he's ever had, I mean, him going out by knocking a dude out, that's the way it's got to end. So, you know, Tyson Fury's, we'll see what happens. If he ends up coming back to boxing, you never know. It could always happen. But regardless, he is one of the greatest boxers of all time, and he had an excellent career. And that was a great way to go out for him. So let's move on to the NBA playoffs, and what a weekend of basketball we had. Let's go ahead and start off in the Eastern Conference. Let's start off with the Miami Heat versus Atlanta series. In Game 3, Atlanta ended up getting the win, 111-110. It was a close battle. Actually, Atlanta had the lead for most of the way, and then Miami started to make a nice comeback, but they couldn't get it going in the end. The last, I want to say, like 3 minutes was just a back and forth battle between Atlanta and the Heat, and they were just exchanging baskets the whole way, and Atlanta was able to hang on. But then in Game 4, Miami came rolling back, and they got the win, 110-86, and it was not even close. Jimmy Butler, he had 36 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals. So he's on fire this round, at least against Atlanta. Right now, Miami's got a 3-1 series lead, and I wouldn't be shocked if they close it out in Game 5. But yeah, Miami is rolling right now. And then moving on to the Milwaukee Bucks versus Chicago Bulls series, Game 3. Milwaukee ended up smashing Chicago 111-81. And then Game 4, they ended up smashing Chicago 119-95. So neither of those games were close. Giannis has just been balling uncontrollably. Last game, he had a double-double, went 32 points, 17 rebounds. And he's just playing at an MVP caliber level right now. Milwaukee's got the 3-1 series lead. And I wouldn't be shocked if they close this out in the next game, just because they're playing great, which is very shocking, because I didn't know. I had a feeling the Middleton injury would affect them, You know, he's one of their top players. I would actually, if you're ranking all of their entire roster, he's probably second behind Giannis. And he's been out, and you thought they would lose a step, but no, they have not. They've absolutely obliterated the Chicago Bulls in these last two matchups, and really in this entire series. And it's not surprising at all. The Bucks are a really good team, and they're going to be a force for whoever they face the rest of the way in the playoffs. Then moving on to the Philadelphia 76ers versus the Toronto Raptors. Game four, the Toronto Raptors ended up getting a win finally, 110-102. They actually had the lead most of the way. You could kind of tell that this thumb injury might become a problem for Joel Embiid. He did not have a good game at all. Now, of course, when you are the superstar, people are going to notice when you have a bad game. And I mean, wow, you had one bad game. Of course, that's going to happen. The 76ers still have a 3-1 series lead right now. And so I expect them to close this out quick. But you could tell that thumb injury might be a problem for Embiid the rest of the way. But he's going to play through it. Unlike some players, and we'll get to the some players in this next matchup, the Boston Celtics versus the Brooklyn Nets. Boston has been absolutely dominating this series. Game three, they won 109-103. And while it was a close final score. This was not a close game. Brooklyn looked pathetic. As a matter of fact, they are looking more and more pathetic as this series goes on. Boston's up 3-0 right now. And Brooklyn is just a straight-up mess. And it's just kind of funny because, you know, last week they were playing this soundbite of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving when they both kind of when that season started, when they first, I think it was from like two or three years ago, and they were talking about the hiring of Steve Nash and how they didn't really look at him like a coach. He's just Steve. He's not Coach Nash. He's Steve. And they were kind of just like talking about him like he's just one of the homies. And it's like, well, that usually doesn't work. I know a lot of people like to act like a hierarchy is like some type of, oh, I'm holding you down thing. But it's like, no, there's actually a reason why there's a hierarchy, and it's because it works. You can't just throw people together and think shit's going to work, because that's not the way it works. And you could tell that's not the way it works just by the way they're playing in this series. I mean, hey, you got to give Boston all the credit because they're playing great on defense like they've been playing, especially the second half of the season. Boston's just been on it since Christmas. And Jason Tatum, he's playing like an MVP as well. So Boston, you got to give it up to him. And they're playing amazing defense on Kevin Durant right now. Kevin Durant has basically been silent this entire series. And even he's frustrated. He's been saying he's frustrated in his press conferences and he's frustrated in his play and that he should be playing better. And then Kyrie Irving had the stupidest quote after the last game too, where he's talking about, oh, we haven't had time to gel. We haven't had time to mesh. And it's like, well, yeah, that's kind of your fault when you didn't get vaccinated and you missed a whole bunch of games this season. And I'm not hating on him because he didn't get vaccinated. Quite frankly, I couldn't care less what your thoughts are on getting vaccinated. I'm just pointing out that he missed a lot of the season because he wasn't vaccinated. So him complaining about how they weren't gelling and meshing and they're having issues working together as a team because they haven't had time to work together. Well, yeah, that's on you, homie. And of course, he didn't apologize for that at the podium. He just wants to move along, as he always does, because you can't ever talk about certain issues with some of these players, especially with the Nets, because they're all very sensitive with the Nets. And then moving on to the next sensitive player with the Brooklyn Nets, his Ben Simmons. And this, he's not playing game four, which is currently on my TV right now as we speak. Boston's got the lead, 15-12 in the first quarter. But Ben Simmons is not playing in this game. There were rumbles that it was possible he might play this game. But I'm sure as soon as that loss happened, he was like, not playing. And it's just like the Ben Simmons thing has just grown more and more pathetic as this season has gone on. And you really just wonder, does this dude want to play basketball? That's been my question with him all season. Because he always has the convenient excuse. Whenever something happens, whenever he's not playing, it's, oh, I got mental health issues. Oh, I don't like playing for the 76ers. Oh, I'm mad at Doc Rivers. Oh, my back hurts. Oh, man. Like, there's always an excuse with Ben Simmons. And And Brooklyn traded for this dude, and I can't believe they traded for him in the first place. You know, so that situation has turned into straight up idiocy. And Brooklyn is basically right where my Lakers are at in Shittsville. And I wouldn't be shocked if Brooklyn is swept on out tonight. As a matter of fact, this currently is the only series that could possibly sweep left in both the East and the West first round playoffs. So everybody's been able to get a win except the Nets, and that's extremely pathetic with what's going on. And honestly, this team kind of needs a revamp. From top to bottom, they should get a new GM. They should fire Steve Nash. Although I did read today that they're probably going to be sticking with him, which I kind of think is stupid. But then also at the same time, with the whole thing that happened with Kyrie Irving, him not being vaccinated, so he missed a lot of the games this season. And then you had the whole James Harden situation. Then you had Kevin Durant get injured, and then now you're dealing with this Ben Simmons issue. So it's kind of like, you might want to give Nash a mulligan for this season, but at the same time, they still haven't achieved a goddamn thing since he's taken over as coach and since this whole move has happened with Brooklyn. So we'll see what happens in this matchup tonight. I kind of think Boston's going to sweep them on out, as they really should, because Brooklyn's just awful. All right, moving on to the Western Conference matchups. The Phoenix Suns versus the New Orleans Pelicans has actually turned into an excellent series. Game three, Phoenix got the win, 114-111. They got right back on track in that game. Chris Paul had a nice game, but then game four rolled around, and New Orleans kicked their ass, 118-103. And the series is right now tied at two. But you really, like I was giving praise to Brandon Ingram in the last episode, and I'm giving him more praise. It's crazy how this guy's really turned it on, especially the second half of the season. I always knew he had it in him. Like I said, he was a Laker. I liked him when he was a Laker. Even though he wasn't performing at this level as a Laker, I knew he had it in him. So it's really cool to see him really step it up and take his team to the brink right now. I mean, he's got the Suns on edge, and you could tell the loss of Devin Booker is a big deal right now for the Suns. So we'll see how I think they could still get by the Pelicans in this round. But the next round, if they're missing Booker for a lot of that series or the whole series, they might run into some issues depending upon who they end up playing. So we'll see what goes on with that one. But that series is tied at two currently. Then Dallas Mavericks versus Utah Jazz, game four, it was awesome. They were going back and forth, especially at the end of the game. I mean, like, they were just trading hoops like there was nothing. And finally, Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, they had this great connection. Donovan Mitchell gets the assist. He tosses it right up to Gobert, who gets the slam dunk, and they get the win, 100-99. And the series is tied at two, and Luka came back, and he actually looked pretty good. Obviously you could tell that the injury is going to be a problem, but he came back, he had a solid game. It's just Utah got the better of Dallas in that one. So we'll see how the rest of that series goes. Then the Memphis Grizzlies versus Minnesota Timberwolves, game four, Minnesota got the win, 119-118. Karl Anthony Towns, he had a huge monster game, went for a double-double with 33 points and 14 rebounds, and this series is tied at two. And also of note, we had us another stupid-ass protester, of course. This one was even more hilarious. I think this one was probably the best out of the three, because I guess before the game started, they knew that this protester was already there. So they were kind of already keying in on if they were going to do anything. And so I was actually watching this game. And then it went into halftime, and it was like, you know, like 10:30. So I was kind of already tired. I'm like, meh, I'll just go to sleep. And even as I'm turning the TV off and going to sleep, I'm like, oh man, we didn't have a protester tonight. Oh, that kind of sucks. And then I wake up and I find out that we had another stupid ass protester. And this one was just hilarious. And I just missed it too, because it was kind of at the start of the third quarter. But this dumb bitch is sitting behind the Timberwolves bench. And she runs out onto the court and immediately is tackled, like immediately. And it was just so hilarious because they tackled the shit out of this bitch. And they just drag her ass out of there. And then they realize that another person is with her filming the whole thing. And so they get them out of there. And it wasn't as dramatic as the last two, but it was just hilarious to see them absolutely tackle this bitch. And I would like to point out how stupid these protesters are, because these are really good seats that they're paying for to do these dumb little protests. Like, they're literally on, like, floor seats, which aren't expensive during the regular season. So you can imagine how expensive they are during the playoffs. They're, like, exponentially higher, like, somewhere in the, like, 50 grand area. So these motherfuckers are spending a whole lot of goddamn money to get tackled on the court. Nobody gives a shit what they're protesting, by the way. And then also of note, so not only are they giving money to this person that they're protesting, like a lot of money, you know, they're paying for these expensive seats, giving money to this owner who they're protesting. Really smart move, guys. They're just so fucking ridiculous. And, but they're also, every time one of these protesters has stormed onto the court or whatever, the Timberwolves win. So all three times, the Timberwolves have got the win. So really, they're like their good luck charm at this point. I'm sure the owner's going to be like having fake protesters running out onto the court now just to hope that the protester juju keeps it moving. So these protesters aren't having much success with their protests because they're just giving a whole lot of money to this owner that they're protesting. And they're getting kicked right off the court right quick. So good luck with that, guys. But it was very hilarious to see this bitch get tackled. And I guess her whole point was she was going to run onto the court. And underneath, like, her jacket, she was wearing a ref's, like, jersey. Like, she would look like one of the refs in the game. And so what she was going to do was run out onto the court, take off her jacket, blow a whistle, and throw up, like, the technical foul sign. And I guess, I don't know what she was going to do after that, but that was her big grandiose gesture for whatever the hell these losers are protesting. But boy howdy, they are making shit real hilarious and real interesting. Did not expect this shit, but it's definitely a great little side thing that continues to happen. So we'll see what happens in this next Memphis. I almost want Minnesota to just go on all the way to the finals, just so out of hopes we can keep getting these retarded protests. All right, and then moving on to the last matchup in the Western Conference first round, we have Golden State Warriors versus the Denver Nuggets. Game four, Denver actually had a really good game. They actually had the lead the majority of the way and ended up winning 126 to 121. But Golden State has a solid series lead right now at 3-1. And I wouldn't be shocked if they end up winning in game five. Golden State's just playing at such a great level right now. Denver just actually happened to get it going finally as a team. They weren't just putting it all on Jokic. A couple other guys started stepping up. And so they were able to get the win, but I don't really see this matchup going much further, just because Golden State is playing excellent basketball right now, and the rest of the league better be put on notice with that team, that's for sure. And then a couple of season awards were given out this week as well. Rookie of the Year award went to Scottie Barnes of the Toronto Raptors. And then Most Improved Player went to Ja Morant of the Memphis Grizzlies. Both well-deserved. Scottie Barnes just barely won it. And Ja Morant as well. But, you know, you can't really... Ja Morant really has improved tremendously, which is a lot, which says a lot, because he was a good player coming in the league, but now he's like a perennial player, in my opinion. And then tonight's games, we've got Boston versus Brooklyn, which is currently on right now. Then we're going to have Toronto versus Philly, who could, the 76ers could end this tonight. And then Utah versus Dallas is on tap as well. So that's what we've got for basketball. So let's move on to MLB. I've got my top 10 baseball MLB power rankings. So let's go ahead and start it off with number one. Number one this week, we have a new number one, the New York Mets. They are 12-5 right now. They have the best record in baseball. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, and they just absolutely dominated this week. They murdered my San Francisco Giants at the beginning of the week. But their starting pitching, Max Scherzer has proven to be the best pickup, free agency pickup they could have made. And then they have this new rookie, McGill, who has also been spectacular, basically his last couple of starts. So both the starting pitching is dominating, but also offensively and defensively, they're just playing great. You know, Starling Marte, he has been hitting the ball out of the park. He's been making huge moves. He's been stealing the base when he has to. He's just one of those, basically a five-tool player who he just makes big moves. And it's kind of crazy because, you know, they didn't really make a big deal out of a lot of the moves that the Mets made this offseason other than Max Scherzer. And it's looking like the Mets, you know, it's early in the season and things could totally change, especially come All-Star weekend. That's usually the halfway point and sometimes shit gets flipped. But, you know, the Mets have a solid lineup. And if they're able to, you know, avoid injuries and just keep up what they're doing, they're definitely going to be a solid baseball team this year. And then Francisco Lindor, he's also had a great week this week as well. And he's just been one of the huge offensive forces right there with Marte. So I've got the Mets at number one in my power rankings. Then number two in my top 10 MLB power rankings, stupid ass LA Dodgers. 11-4 overall record, but 8-2 in their last 10 games. And they just absolutely dominated the Padres this weekend. Bellinger had basically a home run every game this weekend. I think he had three or four home runs. So he had a great weekend. Freddie Freeman, he's been hot. And then Clayton Kershaw, he's the ageless wonder, it seems like. It's probably inevitable that he's going to get injured at some point in the season. But until then, the dude is pitching like no other. So the Dodgers are number two on my power rankings. Number three on my top 10 MLB power rankings are my San Francisco Giants. They didn't fall as far as I thought they were falling on Friday. They're 11-5, 7-3 in their last 10 games. It's just they did not look good against the Mets last week. But then they came back and dominated Washington this weekend with a sweep. And their pitching is looking really great. I mean, Rodon, he's still dominating. And then you got Alex Wood, who's also dominating. And we have had some injuries, but so far that hasn't been a huge issue. And then Jock Peterson, he's just been on fire this week. So I've got my San Francisco Giants. They didn't fall too far. They fell to number three in my top 10 MLB power rankings. Then at number four, a team I did not have in last week, and that would be the New York Yankees. They are currently 10-6. They've gone 7-3 in their last 10 games. They just are coming off of a sweep of the Cleveland Guardians. And Aaron Judge had a spectacular week this week. He was knocking the balls out of the park all in practically every game. He had two home runs in one game. But he had a solid week. And then now their pitching they had a really good week pitching, and that says a lot because, you know, Cole, he started off the season with a really bad start, but then he came back this weekend and looked solid. But then Jameson Taillon, he had a good start this week. Then you had King come in for relief, and he pitched a solid game. And then Severino, you know, when he's not injured, he looks like he has potential to be a really good pitcher. And so far, he started, and he had a solid outing as well. So I've got the Yankees up at number four this week. Then number five on my top 10 MLB power rankings, another surprise. I couldn't believe it when I was doing research on the last week of baseball, but the Seattle Mariners. They are currently 10-6, and they are on they've gone 8-2 in their last 10, and they're on a three-game winning streak right now. They just swept Kansas City this weekend. But the big deal is Ty France. He is not a lot of people know about him, unless you're a huge fantasy baseball fan or a player like I am. This week he had 5 hits and 5 RBIs in one game. If I recall, he's batting like a 374 right now, something crazy like that. He is just been on fire since the season started. So, That's a lot of the success of the Mariners right now. But really, their starting pitching is solid. They're playing great defensively, and they're just playing great small ball. They're working the bases perfect and scoring the runs when they need to. And I got the Mariners at number five right now. Then at number six on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Toronto Blue Jays. They're currently 10-6, 6-4 in their last 10 games. They just had a good week this week. They took 2 of 3 from Houston, and then they took 2 of 3 from Boston as well. So those are two solid teams that they got wins against. And actually in the Houston game, George Springer, who used to play for the Houston Astros, walked right up to bat. He was the first guy to bat and hit a home run right against his old team. So, you know, he was feeling good about that. Especially because Springer actually had a pretty down season last year. So far he's been on fire, and that's what you want to see when you're going up against your old team. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I've got the Colorado Rockies. Yep, that's the third NL West team still rocking in my top 10. It's a good possibility you might be hearing me discuss another NL West team a little bit later in this power rankings. But number 7, we got the Colorado Rockies, who started off surprisingly well. They are 10-5 right now on the season, 6-4 in their last 10 games on a two-game winning streak. You know, they've got Cool is one of their starting pitchers, who's just been having a phenomenal season so far. And then you got their hitters, who their batting lineup has just been scoring like no other. You got Gerchuk, who had a great week. You got Blackman, who had a great week. You got Chris Bryant, who's had a great week. And then you got CJ Cron, who, by the way, I think has the most perfect last name to be in Denver, Colorado, because, you know, weed is legal in Colorado. So, you know, they always be smoking on the chronic. And I can attest to that their chronic is amazing out there. So CJ Cron, perfect name for somebody in Colorado, just saying. Number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the San Diego Padres. Yes, that is the fourth NL West team you see in there. That's how dominant this NL West is this year. I looked at the Diamondbacks. I was like, are they good? Oh, no, of course the Diamondbacks aren't good. But the Padres are looking good, and they don't even have Fernando Tatis right now. So right now the Padres are 10-7, 6-4 in their last 10 games. They did just get their asses beat by the Dodgers this weekend, but other than that, they had a good week overall. Yu Darvish is like having this resurgence. You know, for a while there, when Darvish first hit the scene, he was okay. And he pretty much was okay for the majority of his career. And then all of a sudden, he had this resurgence last year with the Cubs. And he had like one of the most solid seasons ever. And he's continuing that with his run with the Padres now. So good for him. And I mean, until he starts falling off, but it's looking like he's made a good home right now in San Diego. You know, Nola, their catcher, he had a walk-off home run this week against the Dodgers. And then Will Myers, he's had a great week so far this week. So the Padres, number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I've got the Milwaukee Brewers. They're currently 10-6, 7-3 in their last 10 games, coming off of actually a controversial win last night. Angel Hernandez, he's a notorious umpire that all players and all managers complain about. Everybody hates him. And he's pretty awful at his job, if you ask me. He's been in the league for many years, too. So it was a controversial kind of end last night to the game. But regardless, the Brewers had a good week. Lauer had 13 strikeouts in one of their games over the weekend. Josh Hader is continuing to obviously be the best closer in the league. He currently leads the league with 8 saves, I believe. And they dominated Pittsburgh and Philadelphia this weekend, or this last week. So I got the Brewers in there at number 9. Then rounding out my top 10 MLB power rankings, I've got the Minnesota Twins. They're currently 8-8, 6-4 in their last 10 games, but they are in a 4-game winning streak, and that is actually the longest winning streak currently in baseball. Byron Buxton had this amazing walk-off in the 10th inning. The other day, I believe it was on Saturday, he just smashed this ball just way out of the park. And they ended up sweeping the Chicago White Sox this weekend, which is a big deal because the White Sox are a pretty solid team, even though the injuries are starting to pile up for them right now. But I've got the Twins rounding out my top 10 MLB power rankings. And then just a couple of other things that happened in baseball this weekend. The Chicago Cubs scored their final score of one of their games against the Pittsburgh Pirates this weekend. I believe it was on Friday, might have been Saturday. It was either one of those days. The final score ended up being 21-0. Yeah, 21-0 in a baseball game. So that that was just noteworthy in my opinion, because you rarely ever see that kind of score in baseball. But damn, the Cubs put up some numbers. And did Pittsburgh know they had a game that day? I don't know, but that was an ass-kicking. And then Miguel Cabrera, he hit his 3,000th hit of his career this weekend. He's one of only 32 players ever to achieve that. Miguel Cabrera, he's been one of the top hitters in the league since his rookie season. You know, he was great with the Florida Marlins. Then he ended up getting traded to the Detroit Tigers, and he's been there ever since. And both places, he's dominated. He's just been a spectacular player his entire career. Hitting the 3,000th hit is not surprising. It's actually nice to see that his career is being prolonged now that he's kind of moved into more of a DH role, because he is an old guy. But man, he still got it, and even beyond the 3,000 hits last year, he actually ended up hitting his 500th home run. And so now he is only one of six. There's only six other players who have had 3,000 hits and 500 home runs in their career. So that just goes to show you, Miguel Cabrera is one of the greatest baseball players of all time, especially of this era. When it comes to hitting, he is one of the best, and congratulations to him on the achievement. All right, and so we've got the NFL draft coming up this Thursday. So since that's around the corner, I decided let's go ahead and do a top five list, and I'm going to do the top five first overall picks in the NFL draft. Top five greatest first overall picks in the NFL draft. And basically, because if you really actually look at the history of the draft, the number one overall pick doesn't always end up being successful. And really, it's actually kind of like a crapshoot. So, you know, there is a lot of emphasis put on, you know, the first overall pick, no matter who it ends up being. But when you really look at the history of the draft, it's actually kind of shocking at how many end up being failures. But these are the five that I looked at who career-wise, and I'm not just taking into account their NFL career. I'm also taking into account that basically all of these guys are, first of all, they're all Hall of Famers. So their careers are perennial, and you really can't argue with how great their careers ended up being in the NFL. But then before they hit the NFL, you know, their college careers were successful, and even other careers, whether they played in junior college or high school, they were all very successful throughout their entire time in playing football. So let's go ahead and start it off with number five, my guy O.J. Simpson. He was drafted in 1969, number one overall by the Buffalo Bills out of USC. That's who he played for. He won a Heisman while he was at USC. In his NFL career, he ended up winning an MVP in 1973. Then he also won Offensive Player of the Year that same year in 1973. That year, he actually ended up becoming the first running back ever to eclipse 2,000 yards in one season. And he still actually holds the record, while there's been a few other running backs throughout the history of time who have eclipsed 2,000 yards. Nobody's done it in only 14 games, and that's never going to happen. Well, I mean, it could happen, but we have more games now than they used to. So actually what he did is very, nobody's achieved it, and nobody's going to achieve it. And actually in that same season, he had over 200 yards in six games. And that's still a record to this day. So, I mean, he dominated in the NFL. He was five-time first team. So, you know, his NFL career, like I said, Hall of Famer. But then also when he was with USC, they won a national championship. He won a Heisman. He was one of the top recruits. And then also he didn't really play high school football that much. He was actually more getting into trouble with the law, as a matter of fact. Then he ended up actually going to, I guess like Willie Mays inspired him to go to a junior college, and he started playing football there. And I think he was a running back and a linebacker, something like that. I know he played like two positions. But then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, people were recruiting him as one of the top running backs for college. And he ended up choosing USC and had a perennial career there. His numbers retired there. He's a part of the College Football Hall of Fame. So O.J. Simpson definitely has to be on this list of top five greatest first overall picks in the NFL draft. Then at number four on the top five greatest first overall picks in the NFL draft, I've got Terry Bradshaw. He was drafted in 1970 by the Pittsburgh Steelers. He went to Louisiana Tech. And it's actually kind of funny to me because a lot of people like to slight Terry Bradshaw because they like to say, oh, he had great wide receivers. He had a great defense. He had a great running back. And it's just like, yeah, because great teams win. But I mean, really, if you actually look at Terry Bradshaw's career, number one, he's a four-time Super Bowl champion. And out of those four, he was the Super Bowl MVP in two of them. That says a lot. He actually won the MVP, the league MVP, in 1978. Once again, that says a lot. I know people like to slight him and say, he had a good team. Sorry, you don't just magically win MVP. You don't. But he did, and it's because he's a good football player. When you actually look at his college career, he was one of the most sought-after quarterbacks from Louisiana Tech. Okay, he didn't go to like some big ass school. He went to Louisiana Tech. I know nobody's heard of that. That's because he's pretty much the guy who came out of Louisiana Tech, and he's like the only guy really noteworthy who's come out of that school. And he owns basically every passing record that they've had still to this day. And you know, he had a great spectacular career as a pro player, a college player, and then also in high school. I believe he won a championship. He either took his team to the championship and won, or he just took them to the championship. Regardless, Terry Bradshaw has been a spectacular quarterback from a young age. So he definitely deserved to be a number one overall pick, and he definitely deserves to receive the accolades rather than the hatred that most people spew when you're a winner. It's a team sport, and unless you're playing tennis or golf or boxing or UFC or any of these individual sports, a team sport takes an entire team. And if you look at any championship team, they have multiple amazing players, and Terry Bradshaw was one of them. I'd also like to note, too, on my list here, I'm actually exempting John Elway from this. He was a number one overall pick, but he did not play for the team that selected him, which was the Baltimore Colts at the time. It was one of these things where it was kind of like the same thing where Eli Manning didn't want to play for the San Diego Chargers when he was drafted. And so San Diego drafted him number one overall, but then they ended up trading him to New York. And basically the same thing happened with John Elway. You know, John Elway, leading up to the draft, his dad was basically advising him against wanting to join Baltimore Colts, which, I mean, you really can't blame him because they actually ended up moving. Like, they moved the team overnight to Indianapolis. And it's really just because it was a whole bunch of issues between the owner and the city of Baltimore, and they actually were going to be taking over the team. The city of Baltimore was going to be taking over the team. So he ended up, you know, moving the team overnight. Like, he literally called up Mayflower, the moving company, and they brought out like 18 trucks just in a matter of 24 hours. They packed up everything they could and moved on to Indianapolis. So that actually proved to be a good move by John Elway to not want to go to the Colts. And then the Colts ended up trading John Elway to the Denver Broncos because he was kind of threatening that he was going to play baseball. And so that was a whole drama. But the reason why he's not on this list is because he didn't play for the team who originally drafted him, or else he would most definitely be on this list because he is one of the greatest of all time. But that's why he's exempt. So then moving on to number three on my top five greatest first overall picks in the NFL draft, Earl Campbell, drafted in 1978 by the Houston Oilers, drafted from the Hook'em Horns, the University of Texas. He won the MVP in 1979. Yeah, that's his second year in the league. He won the MVP. He won the Rookie of the Year And he was three-time Offensive Player of the Year from 1978 to 1980. Yeah, that's his rookie season. His first three seasons, he won Offensive Player of the Year. And really, if you've ever seen Earl Campbell, he's one of the most exciting running backs. I don't think there's anybody who even compares to him in the league currently who runs as hard as he did. Now, granted, that's part of the reason why his career was cut short. Well, I guess it was kind of cut short. I mean, 10-year career is not bad, but it probably could have been prolonged had he not been such a violent runner, because he was definitely a violent runner. I mean, that dude would just take on linemen and just burst right through him. I mean, there's one of the most famous is when, like, somebody's grabbing onto his jersey and his jersey's ripping and homeboy's still running. So, you know, Earl Campbell, one of the greatest running backs of all time, that's for damn sure. When he was with Texas, he won a Heisman. They did go to the national championship, but unfortunately lost to Notre Dame in that one. But in his career in 1980, he actually averaged 128.9 yards per game, and that's just insane that a running back averaged that per game rushing, especially with the way he ran, because he wasn't like a Barry Sanders type of like juke fast runner. He was just going to bowl you the fuck over and carry nine linemen to the freaking end zone, basically. But Earl Campbell, he was spectacular when he played for the Houston Oilers. He was spectacular when he played for the Longhorns. And he was also a highly recruited high school football player here in Texas. He played in Tyler. And so he's been great at all levels. And so I've got Earl Campbell at number three. Then at number two on my top five greatest first overall picks in the NFL draft. I know this is going to shock y'all that I didn't put him number one. It was really tough for me to not put him number one, but I couldn't put him number one because number one is literally like one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And so even my Cowboy bias and my favorite player bias couldn't overtake number one. But number two on my list is my guy, Troy Aikman, my favorite player of all time. He was selected in 1989, first overall by my Dallas Cowboys. He played for the UCLA Bruins. He's a three-time Super Bowl champ, was a Super Bowl MVP in Super Bowl 27. He had a prolific career. He also gets a lot of hate, too, just like Terry Bradshaw, where people like to say, oh, he had this good of a team. Well, you know what? If you actually look at Troy Aikman, like, he's actually been sought after since he was high school. Jimmy Johnson has said this on numerous occasions. When Jimmy Johnson used to coach the University of Miami, he recruited Aikman out of high school, and Aikman actually ended up going to Oklahoma. And at Oklahoma, he played a couple of games, and then he broke his ankle. And then the guy who took over for him, they won a national championship in 85. So the guy who took over for him ended up still being the starter. So Aikman ended up transferring to UCLA. And UCLA had literally like their best season still to this day in football with Troy Aikman at quarterback. He went 20-4. That's his record. That's his overall record there for two seasons. He was a consensus All-American. He finished third for the Heisman Trophy race. So he was actually he was one of the most sought after players. And then when he played for the Cowboys, he had an amazing career too. So it is funny that he did end up with Jimmy Johnson finally when he was drafted by the Cowboys. But I mean, Aikman was a great player, and he was also a great baseball player too. He actually had the opportunity to go pro in baseball if he wanted to do that as well. But thank God he chose football, because who knows where I would be if Troy Aikman did not play football. But can you believe it? I put him at number two on one of my top five lists. You would think there's no way I could ever put anybody above Troy Aikman, but I could not justify it, and you'll know why. Because number one on my top five greatest first overall picks in the NFL draft is Peyton Manning, and I mean, he was drafted in 1998 by the Indianapolis Colts, played for the Tennessee Volunteers, and I mean, really, there are too many records that Peyton Manning owns for me to list. But he is a two-time Super Bowl champion. He was a Super Bowl MVP in one of them. And currently, this is still a record in the NFL today. He's a five-time MVP. And I mean, like I said, when he retired, he owned multiple records. He still owns multiple records to this day. And really, the thing about Peyton Manning is he was really, he's just like one of the most, he's just a game changer. You can really put him with some of the shittiest players of all time at every single position, and he's going to make every one of them better. Like, in my personal opinion, I don't think Marvin Harrison would have had a Hall of Fame career if it wasn't for Peyton Manning. And just the way, like, he totally changed the game. Just the way people look at offense, you know, the way the offense is today is basically because of Peyton Manning. So that's why I had to put him at number one. Then also as well, his college career was great. He was consensus All-American with Tennessee. He owns a bunch of records with Tennessee. And then also his high school time as a football player, he was amazing as well. Really, Peyton Manning was just born to play football, and at every single level that he's played football, he's been the best. And so that's why I couldn't put Troy Aikman number one. You know, I wanted to put him number one, though. Even when I was going through it, I was like, oh, I got to put Troy Aikman number one. And then I was like, oh, man, Peyton Manning was the number one overall pick. And I can't put anybody above him, at least in this type of a list, especially when you look at the number one overall pick. Lots of times it does not pan out. And that's like this top five list actually wasn't that difficult to put together. Other than the John Elway thing, because like I said, John Elway would be on here as well if he had ended up playing for the Colts. But I really couldn't just justify putting him on there for that reason. But yeah, that's my top five. Greatest first overall picks in the NFL draft. O.J. Simpson at number five, Terry Bradshaw at number four, Earl Campbell at number three, Troy Aikman at number two, and Peyton Manning at number one. So we've got the draft on Thursday. I don't think it's that, it's not as exciting as a draft as it usually is. It is exciting that it's in Las Vegas. I was really looking at the setup today of where it's going to, where they're going to be announcing and where the main headquarters are going to be. And if you know the layout of Vegas, it's actually really cool. I think the Bellagio fountain is going to be where they're basically hanging out on Thursday night. So that should be an interesting look. And then they're going to move over to the big Ferris wheel. I know Vegas loves when you call it the big Ferris wheel, which is why I called it the big Ferris wheel. Looks real fucking stupid, by the way, too. Something I've never really wanted to go on in Vegas, but it is a nice area. I see why they're going to hold the rest of the draft there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So yeah, we got the draft this weekend. Not as a big deal as it usually is. There aren't many perennial players. There isn't a Trevor Lawrence. There isn't a Peyton Manning. There isn't an O.J. Simpson, but also at the same time, we don't know that yet. One of these guys could come out and surprise, or hell, who knows? This first overall pick could end up being one of these guys who maybe becomes one of the greatest of all time. You never know what's going to happen. That's the great thing about the draft. So we got that starting on Thursday. That'll be rolling through the weekend. And then, you know, we got more baseball this week, and then the NBA playoffs continue to roll on. We'll see who has moved on to the conference semifinals on Friday. So that's when I'll talk to you guys on Friday. Y'all have a good week. Peace out, fools.